This is the Well-Being Report on WDIY, discussing the vital conditions for health and well-being in the Lehigh Valley. Featuring WDIY's Margaret McConnell and Dr. Samantha Schock, Executive Director at the Leonard Parker Poole Institute for Health. Now, here's Margaret and Samantha.
Welcome back to the Wellbeing Report on WDIY. I'm your co-host, Margaret McConnell, the Executive Director here, and I am pleased to co-host this program with the Executive Director for Leonard Parker Poole Institute for Health, which is supporting this program. So thank you for being here, Samantha Schock.
Hi, Margaret. Good evening. Happy to be here.
So over the past year, we've had lots of really great conversations and have taken our listeners on a journey through the seven vital conditions for health and well-being. Those are essential ingredients that help our communities not just survive, but thrive.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of ground this year in looking at the vital conditions, including basic needs for health and safety. And we particularly talked really about healthy food access and how do we create more opportunities for healthy food access, lifelong learning, meaningful work and wealth, and how people earn a living to be able to thrive within their own day-to-day lives, accessible transportation, and a healthy natural environment. As we know, thriving natural world around us is always important to our overall health and well-being. And each category really is an asset that plays a critical role in our overall health of the neighborhood. But today, we are going to focus on one thing that binds all of those individual vital conditions together: belonging and civic muscle.
Yes. So tell me more about what that means.
Kind of as the glue, or in the days following Thanksgiving, the pie filling, if you will, that holds the entire recipe for well-being together. Without belonging, without the ability to work together across differences, to feel connected to a place and to one another, all of those other conditions can't reach their full potential. So it's really the piece that is behind all of them and kind of amplifies the effect of each of them individually.
And the diagram that actually the Ripple Foundation came up with to illustrate this, the civic belonging is in the middle, right, of the circle.
Right. It's the center of the circle.
To it. Yeah.
Exactly.
To help us unpack all of this, we're thrilled to welcome Dr. Bobby Milstein from the Ripple Foundation. Bobby is a national leader in system strategy and shared stewardship. He directs system strategy for Rethink Health at the Ripple Foundation. And his work has shaped how organizations like Leonard Parker Poole and LVHN imagine community health.
Yeah, back in 2023, we kicked off our LPPIH speaker series, and Bobby was actually our first speaker of that speaker series, and he delivered a talk that introduced the well-being portfolio. So that circle that you were just talking about, Margaret, the well-being portfolio really highlights how urgent services in communities need to be invested in proportion to the vital conditions that we've been talking about. And at the center of that is that sense of belonging and civic muscle. So think about this as sort of the evolution of social determinants of health, of way of thinking about how all the different efforts that we have within a community come together to add up and to create well-being within a neighborhood. And now that framework for us has really become our North Star for building thriving communities. And he's here today to help us explore why belonging and civic muscle matters so deeply and what it looks like when these ideas come to life.
Awesome. Okay, so let's jump in. Welcome. You'd like to go by Bobby?
Yes, thank you. Delight to be with you.
We start every episode with asking our guests how they define the topic at hand. And so, Bobby, how do you define belonging and civic muscle in the context of the well-being portfolio? And why is it considered the glue at the very center among all the seven vital conditions?
Yeah, that's it's an excellent question. And, you know, in some ways, it's important for each of us to imagine what these words evoke for ourselves. Right? Each of us have a sense of what it means to feel like we belong. And sadly, many of us have been in settings where we feel like the other or the outsider, or this isn't really for me. And we know how distressing that can be. And then on the flip side, civic muscle is a little bit less familiar construction, but we know what is our civic life, right? Our sort of encounters with a world that's bigger than ourselves. And the muscle can be just that, is the power to be able to do things that we couldn't do alone, right? And that's what these two words are meant to evoke, is our own experiences individually and collectively around feeling when we belong and when we have the power to do things together that we might care about. We could code switch with other labels, right? You can easily say very close synonyms are connection and contribution, right? Everybody has feels like a deep need to connect. And sometimes we don't really feel fully connected unless we're also contributing, valued for the things that we bring and so forth. So those are, very close concepts. Why are they at the center? For a couple reasons. One is, you alluded to this, in all those other areas, we want to be able to establish food systems that are, healthy, and transportation that is easy and safe and rewarding and meaningful work and wealth and, lifelong learning, all of these areas which we might think of as having a lot to do with our opportunities to reach our full potential. But I'm like, mean this really very practically. How do we create food systems and transportation systems and education? How does any of that get done, and for whom? Knowing that there's room to improve in all of that. We've got, a learning curve that's been going on for hundreds of years, and uncertain questions about, is the world that we've inherited, the ones that we were born into, are we going to be able to pass that on to future generations and maybe even leave it better than we found it? So there's all these uncertain questions about, can we create opportunities that are built for everyone to thrive together? And that's where recognizing at the center of this work is the who are the we, right? Who are these people? And making a firm commitment that everybody, should feel love as part of a whole community, embraced for who they are, valued for what they bring. That part of the belonging thing is itself a vital condition. Same for the civic muscle. Everybody has a need to feel that they're valued for what they bring, and that we can do things together that we couldn't do alone. So these things are vital conditions unto themselves, but they also answer a very practical question of, how are we supposed to make progress in any of these other areas? The first step is to expand that sense of who doesn't feel connected yet, who's creativity and capacities or culture, we may be able to bring in to build even more civic muscle than we've got today. And so it becomes this practical capacity that's needed to make progress in all the other areas. And for those reasons, like any story you tell in the outer ring of the circle, it kind of has to travel through the inner ring as well.
And I'm having a hard time having this conversation without thinking, you started off with, we're trying to make these vital conditions of health a norm for everyone. And I'm sitting here thinking, my God, we are just continuing to screw it up and go backwards.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's have that discussion. I think part of the virtue of identifying a small but significant set of conditions that we could all agree are vital is to be able to celebrate when we make progress in establishing them, and to be very clear of when they're eroding and for whom, because that represents the unfinished work that really affects all of our lives together. And so it becomes that much easier to spot and sort of halt the threat that comes when any of these vital conditions is either disrupted or denied or, disinvested from. That is a very real concern. And the flip side is, there are also stories of making great progress in these areas, and we should celebrate that. So this is all very contested, right? The world isn't really yet built for these vital conditions to be in place for all of us. And that is really the work of what we think of as shared stewardship. How do we be stewards of our lives together? And some of that gets like very concrete when we ask, how well are we doing on each of these vital conditions?
Thinking about the stewardship piece as you were talking, Bobby, and so I'm glad you mentioned it. And I know that's not really the focus of our conversation today, but can you just share a little bit about what stewardship means? Because I think it helps us not feel that overwhelmingness of everything's going wrong, but what can I do to contribute to what's right?
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful question, because if we take that idea that everybody has something to bring to this work and everybody ought to feel that they belong, then when people are willing to roll up their sleeves and do something that expands that sense of belonging, that builds our capacities to work across differences, that channel all of that, sort of creative potential into any of this work, it's an interesting question. What role are we playing when we're doing that? You can think of, leadership is the typical word. You're leading on behalf of an issue area that you care about or an institution like the Leonard Parker Pool or WDIY Radio or, your school system or your neighborhood association. All of us are connected to organizations. And leading on behalf of those issues in organizations is one thing. Wake up every day doing the stuff around those topic areas and those interests. And I don't want to say anything like disparaging about the idea of leadership, but there's more to the story of making change in the world than just leading on behalf of your issue or your organization. There's also the question of could we be good stewards of the things that have been entrusted to us, the things that we value? And the mindsets and practices of being a great leader are not identical to the ones of being a good steward. Stewardship, in some ways, is a lot easier. It's a role that all of us can play. And, anybody individually or through your organization or across networks, we define stewardship as anybody or steward is anybody who's, sort of willing to work with others to establish the conditions that everybody needs to thrive together, beginning with those who are struggling and suffering. So that's a role that any of us can play. We can all make the world like a little bit better, if only over the things that we do ourselves, but also through the people and places that we love and that we touch. And so that the story of shared stewardship is often overlooked. It's actually an old word. It goes back centuries, and it's kind of fallen a little bit out of view as our attention has been focused on sort of leadership and what organizations and people in power are actually doing. But stewardship reminds us all that we all have power to make the world a little bit healthier for everybody. And so it's very closely connected to this idea of belonging civic muscle. The people who feel that belonging and are building that civic muscle in many ways are acting like stewards.
I think it's one of the things that really stands out to me about the well-being portfolio overall is that it constantly reminds us to keep the table open for everyone, right? That everyone has a role to play, whether formally or informally, in the work that we're doing. And as we go further in our conversation here, I know we're going to sort of unpack a little bit of what that actually means, but I think it really, it's actually a time where we need that message more than ever, right? That this is not about some and not others. This is not about breaking down of collaboration, but how, in fact, in times of when it feels even more difficult, do we keep ourselves connected to that idea that we are all connected to one another and to well-being? In order for well-being to be achieved, it actually takes all of us. So before we go really deeper into our work locally, Bobby, I wanted to ask you a little bit about what you see elsewhere. You and your team at the Ripple Foundation work with communities across the country who are all trying to work towards the same thing. Can you share some examples of work that you've seen in other places that highlight how they've strengthened or invested in belonging and civic muscle? What does this look like on the ground in different parts of the country?
Yeah, it's a great question. And one thing I'll say, just by way of preface, is that stewards are often sort of unseen and uncelebrated. And the people who are actually turning toward each other instead of turning away often don't get the spotlight, right? So if you start looking for them, though, what at least I've had a kind of a practice in a daily ritual of consciously looking for people who and places where there is this kind of ethos taking hold and where people are curious about better ways to thrive together. And when you go looking for them, at least when I go looking for them, I find them everywhere. And it is such an energizing experience because, the news feeds and the disaster entrepreneurs, like nobody really is channeling these signals to me. But if I go looking for it, I find that I don't have to look very far to identify these, what sometimes we think of as the unsung stewards, the ones who are starting with the idea of how do we expand that circle of belonging bigger than it is right now? And how does even one more person who feels connected to this actually increase our ability to do hard work that otherwise wouldn't be done at all, or couldn't be done nearly as far. There's this nice complementarity between belonging and civic muscle. When one grows, the other grows, and when one grows again, the other one grows even more. And so, so it goes in virtuous and vicious cycles, right? We can erode one, and it's going to erode the other, and vice versa. So, the idea of looking for places that where people are turning toward each other and are curious about better ways to thrive together, what you end up finding is these kind of hidden hotspots of places where that reinforcement of it's a bigger we and we can do bigger things together is actually starting to take hold. Is it the norm yet? You know, we can all debate what that is. It's not, you know, the strongest signal that one can see, but it does exist. And so that's my preface, is like, I think we can find it anywhere. And the scholars have reaffirmed this. There are positive outliers in every system. They go unnoticed, but when you start looking for them, they're on the margins. They're just not the main thing you see. So we've been keeping a kind of map of the colleagues who we've had the privilege of being connected to and, you know, traveling with as in their journey to try to, you know, thrive together and to expand belonging civic muscle as one of the most promising ways to make great strides in this work. And if you look at a map, there's no pattern to that map. It's not just on the coast. It's not just in blue states. It's not just in red states. It's not just big cities. It's like there, I see no obvious pattern in the map, which is more reinforcing of the idea that this is a thing that is actually happening already. So if you think about like a movement that has been, you know, let's say under the radar screen, the movement to thrive together and this practice of expanding belonging civic muscle is already real and rising faster than I ever knew, because I get signals from that over and over again. So that's just a little piece of saying that it's not just a few exotic or unusual places where this is happening. You can find stories of it everywhere. I'm happy to tell some stories from anywhere we would like. We can start in places like Delaware, where they have had a long history in what was called the Healthy Communities Movement, right? Commitment to the idea that community, the experience of community, is really the kind of gateway to a healthier, thriving future. And worldwide, there's been investments in healthy communities, including in Delaware, where there have been a statewide institutional commitment to place-based community building as a primary strategy for improving health across the state. And a few years ago, they were saying, we were among the best healthy community network anywhere around, and we've been doing it for, you know, decades, but there's still something missing, right? What can we do here in Delaware to make this go even further? In particular, it was with the institutional investors, right? They've done a lot of collaborative action, but what about collective investment, right? How do we bring our assets together in ways that can make even greater strides? And it was embracing this orientation around the vital conditions and discovering that belonging and civic muscle is one of those things that when you take that action, it enables you to take many others. And so, in the last several years, as Delaware has had a statewide conversation, they have added like dozens of more communities. They've built curriculum for their local schools to try to introduce the idea of, you know, what we all have something to do and to contribute in every walk of life is shaping these vital conditions. And through it all is this idea of a much wider sense of everybody in Delaware belonging, everybody having a hand in building that civic muscle. And so the investments have boosted by millions of dollars more than they've seen. Like the graphs of the investments that have been going on around this sort of quest of thriving together have been growing to levels that, you know, nobody would necessarily have predicted, because more and more people see that they can each contribute into this work, and they're seeing the convergence of assets that is a big part of this. So Delaware's story is a good one in that you can see it at every level. Hyper neighborhood based Wilmington, you know, neighborhoods on the west side of Wilmington having their own, you know, strategies around building belonging civic muscle and what that looks like in terms of making that neighborhood a revitalized place that, you know, offers a much more promising future for everybody. But it's not just a neighborhood thing or a couple neighborhoods that happen to get a grant or something. It's really an emerging norm that you could see at organizational levels and even in state policy and practice and measurement and so forth. So Delaware is one interesting story.
When you were explaining stewardship and what that means, what kept popping into my head is Mr. Rogers, look for the helpers. They're all around you. And when something's happening, you can find the people who are helping. And like you said, those people don't always get the notoriety that they deserve. They're not looking for it. They don't have the big pockets that everybody's, taking pictures of them giving the giant check. They're in the weeds, right? They're down in the weeds and they're doing things to help others.
Yeah, I can tell another story. So, Palm Beach, Florida, Palm Beach County, Florida has a group that took shape really after the Parkland school shooting. It was a galvanizing moment for a lot of people, a painful moment that really caused a lot of folks to say, we don't want to keep repeating these cycles of trauma and adversity and looking to experts to help solve, like lopsided solutions that only experts are in the lead to help make happen. And they did all the things you'd expect of trying to think about what a guiding vision in this work could look like, and discovering that post-traumatic strength, right? How do we do better by our children and our families and our neighborhood? How do we commit to working collectively in ways that residents and professional providers and systems are all in greater alignment? Like they said all of those aspirational things, but really it was starting to organize around these vital conditions and recognizing that at some level, there's this, as you said, Margaret, this crisis of belonging where lots of kids don't feel like they matter, where lots of families don't see a brighter future. They look at systems and the way the world is built and, not with any optimism. They're really skeptical, A, that it's going to go in a direction that's good for them, or B, that they have any role in making a difference. Those signs are what they started to try to address. And out of a conscious commitment to say, if we're going to do anything that is going to, break from business as usual and put us on a path that doesn't include more Parkland-like events, right? If we're going to allow the potential of kids here and families here to flourish, it's going to have to be in and through that belonging and civic muscle. And so they discovered, just as you said, that there are people with brilliant ideas everywhere. They started making neighborhood mini grants, like, $500 to a person in a neighborhood who's got a good idea. And, they reoriented their idea of who gets investments and what idea are investable. And suddenly that kicks off this virtuous loop of saying, well, we can't change whole systems all at once, but we can get people with passionate ideas to bring in other people and make them feel that they're more connected. And when you start getting that experience, building up some of that, it is, we use the word civic muscle because it functions just like a muscle. If you exercise it, it gets stronger and they do travel together. And so what they ended up discovering in Palm Beach is that they could, do these neighborhood mini grants, which would set them up to be able to do, student connect clubs and looking at the system of care and combining lived and learned expertise around developing solutions. And they started ending up making a short list of simple rules that say, when anybody anywhere in this community comes up with a plan, like your first job is to make sure that you've listened to other people. Don't walk in the door with your plan unless you are ready to tell us who you listen to and how they help shape it. Or, other simple rules like how do we cut the red tape out of the things that otherwise put the burden on people to navigate, bureaucracy and, convoluted, health and human service systems. We can streamline that so people feel like this is about them and their well-being, not our organizational structures. How do we commit to things like power dynamics and know that when we partner together, it's not always on equal footing, but we can learn how to connect with each other in ways that bring everybody's talents and capacities together, and we build even more power together, not power over, each other, but power to do things that we can't do alone. So my point is that when they started to focus on belonging and civic muscle an asset that they needed to build and grow, they found that it is a remarkable asset. It doesn't behave like a fund that you just allocate and, it goes to a handful of grantees or a handful of beneficiaries and now it's gone. This is one of those things that the more you use it, the bigger it gets. So when you invest in Belonging Civic Muscle, it gets bigger. And now you could do even bigger things. And so when they started making micro small investments in this, just the habits and norms of how they relate to each other or who gets, small investments, they discovered that they're able to do bigger and bigger things. And fast forward a year or two, they started publishing reports about generational investing, right? How do we make really big, like look at the long game of this work and start recognizing where we're making our contributions in this time, in a community story that's got a long history and it really has an uncertain future, but it's our future to help direct. And so I get really inspired by what they've done in Palm Beach because it was really out of the humility of saying, we're not protecting our kids and we're not on track for a thriving future when they started to discover that they could turn a lot of that dynamic around and actually pretty quickly without raising a lot of new money, but just by their commitment to connect and contribute in ways that are much more sort of healing and loving. And that dynamic has carried them to a really promising sort of path. They've won Culture of Health awards, and the list of energizing sort of peak moments is pretty long. But I see it growing through their depth of their commitment to turn toward each other and do this work.
Let's talk then about locally. What's going on here, Sam? What can you share about Belonging and Civic Muscle in Motion here in the work in Franklin Park?
I think a lot of what Bobby just said is true here about Lehigh Valley and our neighborhoods within the Lehigh Valley. When we started to think about what neighborhood development looked like for us as a means to health improvement, we knew that we were not starting from neutral with the community, right? We often hear within healthcare that people don't trust the healthcare system. It feels transactional. It feels like we come out and we ask for information, and we take that back into our system, but people don't hear from us again after that. People don't really listen, right? So there's this, norm, I think, for healthcare, but it's not unique to healthcare. It's really any big system that has a lot of moving pieces internally and is also trying to stay connected and be engaged in community at the same time, that it ends up being transactional at best and sort of have a negative, long-term impact over time in that there people aren't feeling like they are a part of that system. So we started to really question, how are we going to do that? How do we start to think about, not doing to the community, but doing with the community? And what does that mean? And neighborhood engagement really became the way that we knew we had to start in order to go from that transactional to more transformational relationship piece, to be in relationship with the neighborhood all the time. And so that led us down that path of sense of belonging and civic muscle. And so we started first and foremost by just getting to meet people. And we started the neighborhood meeting. So once a month, there is a neighborhood meeting for any resident who's in the neighborhood to come out and talk about what they're seeing or what they're experiencing or what they'd like to see addressed. And that was a first step, really, just to start to get to know folks. And then from there, we started to build a series of events. And now, across summer and into fall and in the spring, there are events happening all the time in the neighborhood and within Franklin Park itself, as a, again, a means for connecting with residents and with one another, introducing people. When we have the Kellen Mobile Market in, the neighborhood twice a week, it's a chance for people to connect with each other. And so the repetition, the, being committed to showing up every day, every week, every month, was a big piece for us to say, yes, we know that you've been part of things in the past and that it's gone away eventually, and that we're asking you to give us a chance. And, whether or not we can follow through on that is, only a matter of up time and up to us to show that we can. And so that really became the biggest investment as we got started. And now it's grown into things like having outreach and education pieces around, supports for families, around ICT, which we've talked about on the show before too, which is a model out of Brazil, but is really a peer-based group model where we talk about our everyday stressors and what has helped other people in similar situations. So now we're building that sense of connection to one another, helping each other with our everyday stressors so that they don't grow to a level that causes more distress over time. And then we've looked at approaches, we're starting something called Civic Leadership Academy with our partners at Cohesion Network, really looking at how are we investing and training people to be able to engage in their civic life within their neighborhood or their community. And this isn't just about, Franklin Park. It's very highly invested there, but these are, as Bobby said, it's a capacity that we all need, that we all expect to have there, and yet it's not the thing that we spend the time and effort investing in often. And so that becomes, we have to over invest in that to not only overcome past missed opportunities, if you will, in connecting with people, but also to make sure that we're continuing to have that infrastructure develop over time so that it's there when we are ready to do bigger system changes, when we want to be addressing housing or education. We're not having to start from scratch every single time and engage first to get to that point. That is part of, everything that we do now. And that helps us to really center the neighborhood and neighbors' voices in the work that we're doing.
So that's really exciting to see that there are some larger scale things that have grown out of simple community meetings and conversations. And I know that there's even more to come. We can dive deeper into the Civic Leadership Academy, but we're almost out of time already. So this is clearly a topic that has a lot more meat on it, and I know we're gonna continue this conversation, correct?
Absolutely. We're excited to share that this will actually be the focus of our first half of next year's episodes, and really digging into a sense of belonging and civic muscle and the different ways which we can think about that. But we'll continue this conversation next month with a part two to start off that segment.
Great. Thank you, Bobby Milstein, for being here with us. I know you're going to be back with us next month. You've been listening to the Wellbeing Report on WDIY 88.1 FM. You can always listen to this again by going to our website or any podcast platform. And thank you, Samantha Schock, and also the Leonard Parker Pool Institute for Health for co-hosting and supporting this program.
Thank you, Margaret. It's been a great year.
This has been the Well-Being Report on WDIY. Thank you for listening. This episode and others are archived and available online at lppih.org and on wdiy.org, and also can be accessed on your favorite podcast streaming platform.